I just got to know what it was like finishing a Fast and Furious movie.
It was weird, honestly. It was it was sad, and then it was fun, and then it was there was lots of laughs, and there was a lot of crying, and there was a lot of ups and downs.
Me and Maverick stayed up all day yesterday fishing.
Oh man.
Had a kind of a weird sleep schedule.
That was also my weirdest experience fishing. Like I had fun. We caught so much fish.
Why is it weird?
But it was just like, because I was expected to like, I guess, be there for the day.
We only went fishing. Well, we went on a fishing boat at 3 a.m. Ended up coming back like 3 p.m. So our sleep schedule a little bit whack right now. Welcome. We already got it rolling, bro.
Sweet.
We already got it rolling.
Oh, man, this is rad.
Welcome to the set.
You got me water and everything.
Got water, everything. Sweet. We got questions. We got a script for you.
All right. Right
we're
on.
Prepared.
Yeah, a little
Let's
bit.
Do this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hop right into this. By the way, you can use headphones. You can not use headphones. I kind of go in and out of using them. They sound kind of cool. But
it's just a better idea of like what you sound like?
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It reminds you to get close to the mic instead of being far away.
I kind of like them without, sure. though. So you could
for
do
sure.
either. You could do
yeah,
either.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I'm going to do a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah,
we'll
yeah.
see.
So today's podcast guest, this is a special guest. This is our, I would say our first, I would call you more A-list than like an influencer,
oh,
bro.
Oh, gee, no
like,
way.
Like, yes, though. Like,
yeah,
yes,
for
though.
Real, though.
Not even to like gas too you up kind, too much. Too I mean, kind. You're a legitimate actor, 32 years old, car enthusiast, father, husband, ladies and gentlemen, Cody Bo Walker.
Dude,
welcome to the
for
set,
having
man.
Me, man.
Golf
Appreciate
clap.
It.
Golf clap. I'm not even going to lie either. This is like a little nerve-wracking ourselves, too. You know, we're big fans of your work. We're big car guys ourselves, so we got a lot of amazing things to talk about.
Well, it's mutual, man. It's mutual for sure.
Is it?
Yeah, of course,
dude. Hell yeah, man. That's
dude. You're always up to some wild stuff.
I know. We always see each other somewhere, right?
Dude, I got to know more about that. What that thing that you were flying on?
The hoverboard,
dude. That was insane.
Was that your first time seeing it?
That was my first time seeing it.
So that's
I was like, showing it to everyone at home. I was like, check this out.
Bro,
this
is
that thing
crazy.
Is crazy.
That shit literally looks like fake, huh?
I had to watch it a few times.
Yeah,
I was like,
so,
well, of course, you know.
That guy, that's a guy named Hunter. He built that thing, like, one of one. He built it out of all, like, over-the-counter parts. Like, he built it himself completely. And he's working on, like, manufacturing it and training people how to fly them and doing a flying school. He, like, wants to make it a thing.
Dude.
What's crazy, do you think you need a license to fly one of those?
You do. You need FAA something, for sure.
Is it like a drone thing?
Air.
Well, how high up in the air is that thing going?
Oh, high.
He's gone, like, 60 feet in it.
Okay.
And he can go, I mean, he can go higher.
I don't know how the FAA regulations work at all, but
so sketchy.
I would assume you'd need some sort of license.
Oh, definitely. Okay. For airspace?
Yeah, that'll be...
All the propellers, too. It's crazy because two of the propellers on, like, the hovercraft can go out, and he'll still be good. So he's had propellers blow out midair.
So he's got, like, fail-safes and the whole thing.
Well, two. I mean, as much as you can.
Right.
And then you're...
It's a little important at that
point. And then you're in bindings, like a snowboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're like locked in. So if it goes down, you're going down with it, like quite literally.
And then there's no thing that protects you from the blades. So like if you fall on the blades.
It's like standing on a blender.
Yeah.
It's like the sketchiest shit, bro. We got to get you on it. If you want to film a video with him, I connect you easy.
Well, yeah.
You ever want to do some shit with him?
I would love to.
Hell
I mean,
yeah.
what was the learning curve like on that?
Well, he didn't let me do it.
Oh, he didn't.
Hell
he didn't.
No.
Okay, okay.
If you trained with him and like actually spent time, he would let you do it. Like Sean Kingston hit him up and he wanted to fly it.
Uh-huh.
So they were like talking about maybe doing that. But if you ever need someone like for your for Fuel Fest, man, for your car show.
Why don't we go do that together?
We should do that. I'm down.
That'd be fun.
Okay, so we'll get into this, guys. So if you don't know who Cody Walker is, you're going to know him by the end of this episode for sure. Really quick, you're born in Los Angeles. What was it like being raised there, first of all? Because I learned that recently, that you're from Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, LA is like such a, there's so many people that like migrate into Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But yeah, being a native Angeleno, I guess.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the suburbs. I didn't like grow up in the heart of like downtown Los Angeles. LA County is massive. But yeah, I grew up in LA County, it's a town called Sunland.
Sunland.
Tahunga. Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Blue collar family. My dad was a construction worker, sewer contractor. We had our own company called Walker and Sons, dude. My dad would pump your shit.
Legit.
Well, like, by the time I was, old enough to like start working with dad a little bit, I was like 14, 15. Started doing a little bit of that, but then my dad sold the company and retired because I was the accidental child. So like Paul and Caleb, they got a little bit more of that. Like,
you were the accidental child?
I was the accidental child, straight up, yeah.
What you mean?
Well, the gap. So Paul was 15 years older than me. My sister is 13 years older. My brother Caleb was 11 years older than me. And then I came around.
So you were Caleb, last
They
minute.
Were all planned. Same parents, like total mistake.
But did you ever feel like the only child growing up?
At times, that's a great question. Great question, because at times, for sure.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, when I was really little, like they were still in the house. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, like kind of drop off, you know? So there was times where, much so, other than like the family, you know, like holidays or birthdays, you know, when everyone gets together.
Yeah, of course.
There was times like of my childhood where it did kind of feel like being an only child, for sure.
And then like how, like, I feel like with my siblings, I'm very competitive. And that's how I got into a bunch of my activities.
Yeah.
Were you very competitive with your siblings, or like the age gap?
The age gap was so much that I looked up to them a lot.
Okay.
Like, you know, obviously, especially my brothers, I wanted to be just like them in a lot of ways. But yeah, they were so much bigger than me, fast. You know, like that's a no contest.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not, you know, like just too far apart in age.
So family life, what was that growing up? Blue collar workers. Father owns a business.
Yeah.
How did acting or becoming in the spotlight become part of like...
And cars, for that matter, too.
Yeah, these cars. How...
Well, okay. So we all did commercials and stuff like that, acting like as kids.
And whose idea was that? Like your parents?
Well, my mom was a model.
Oh, okay.
My mom was gorgeous. She did some modeling. It was more for fun. So her agent, when my mom started a family, was like, oh, your kids are so beautiful. Like, you got to get them out there. And so, we all did commercials and stuff like that, but thank God, like, we did not have like a stage mom. Like my parents were never like, dude, my parents were never those people like pushing. It was like, if we did it cause it was fun, the moment wasn't fun anymore, you were done doing it. Paul was the only one that kind of like stuck with it. After like, say, I don't know, middle school, he kept going on, but only because he was naturally really good at it. And it was a means for him to like get by, but he just wanted to grab his board and go surfing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of would always laugh like, dude, I failed upwards. Like, this is not ever what I wanted for myself. I'm just like a normal guy, but hey, if people dig it and they want to watch my movies, like, sweet. Like, it lets me do what I really want to do.
Failing upwards.
Failing upwards. I like that. You can make that a brand.
Yeah. I like that.
Failing upwards. That's a cool little slogan.
Yeah. So really fortunate in that way. But yeah, like I did it too. I kind of fell out of that as I got older. I totally took a different route in life. My mom's a registered nurse. Mm-hmm. So is my sister, actually, for that matter. And I wanted to go into I want to be a fireman and a paramedic.
Okay.
So,
that's gonna be tough in California.
I was. So I was a paramedic. I worked on an ambulance. It's kind of like a stepping stone before you get on with a fire department, typically, unless you're doing like volunteer fire. I was doing a little bit of that at the time too. Paul passed away, and it kind of just like rocked everybody's world, rocked my world. I was living up in Oregon when I was doing that, and I was just like, I suddenly felt so homesick because I had been gone for 3 years, and I was like, I just missed out on his last three. I don't know. These kind of weird things that you start thinking about. I'm like, dude, I just missed out on the last 3 years. And we were super, super close because of that age gap. My parents separated when I was in middle school. And so we spent a lot of time together. So I was so homesick. I came back. He has a foundation. His charity is called Reach Out Worldwide. And they send people all over the world to help after natural disasters. So like medically trained people, construction people, you name it. And I was a paramedic. So I was just like, man, like I gotta help carry that torch and keep Reach Out Worldwide going. And so I moved back down to LA and kind of got that thing back up on its feet again. Cause Paul was the heart and soul of Reach Out Worldwide. Without him, it wasn't going to really continue on. Like, it was kind of a big
yeah, right. yeah.
It was a big mess. Nobody saw it coming, obviously. It was
what made Paul want to do Reach Out Worldwide, like when he first started doing it?
Yeah.
Like, so, I feel like that's
so like
that already makes a person very special to even want to, I feel like, do the extra time and
You know what's so
that's gonna be a lot of work.
What's so cool about it is like, you know, with the, with his celebrity and like what he had, like what most what a lot of them do is they kind of they endorse something else that exists. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But Paul didn't want to just write a check. He wanted to like go and do himself. And he wanted to go and do it without the cameras there. He didn't want it to be a big publicity stunt. So he's like, how can I do that? They're going to if I go and try to go help out there, it's going to be a big publicity stunt for whoever it is I team up with.
Yeah.
And so he created Reach Out Worldwide after going to Haiti, after the January 2010 earthquakes. They had huge earthquakes there and it killed a lot of people.
I remember that.
Devastated that country. And so Paul went down there, paid for the trip, flew out all of his buddies that were firefighters and urban search and rescue certified guys, and went in there, and it just changed his life forever. And was just like, man, I've got to create something, because there's a huge gap in time of like when the supplies show up and when they actually get in the hands of the people. Like there were supplies just like sitting at the airport with no one to distribute them, no one to get them like into the hands of the people, like the boots on the ground. There's a big delay of like, when the
actual people.
Yeah. So like it's kind of like a two thing.
It's just kind of crazy to think that, like, I feel like that'd be step one, get the people. Step two, get the product.
Right. There's a common phrase for it. It's like the disaster after the disaster. So like something big will happen in some developing nation and all the wealthy countries will just like send a bunch of supplies, just devastating their infrastructure because they don't have the infrastructure or the logistics to be able to handle it once it's there. And so it's just like usually we'll sit there and it's like guarded and protected. And meanwhile, the people
it's
are
useless.
Like we need starving. They need water. They need like medicine. And it's just sitting there. So that's a lot of what Reach Out Worldwide also does, is we distribute supplies and all of that. We put the boots
with actual
on the
people. Right. Boots
yeah.
On the ground.
With people.
That makes sense.
And with small teams so that we can like get in there, because otherwise you get caught up in the red tape.
Right.
You show up in the airport with 200 people.
Right.
Like, now you kind of and then, are part of the problem too.
Right.
You
know? Right.
So. Yeah. And then too many people, it's like people are going to be like, well, what do I do? What do I do? And then it's too much. And then small group of people, it's easy.
Yep.
And do you feel kind of blessed that you chose to be a paramedic?
Totally.
So now when you're going there, you have experience and stuff like that?
No, it was, I mean, it's totally, it was.
Was
it
that something planned? No?
Yes, in the fact that, you know, once I became a paramedic, I wanted to volunteer when I could with Reach Out Worldwide and go on some of those missions. Obviously, there was never any intention for me to like help run the organization. Like,
of course,
you know, everything changed when Paul passed away. But yeah, I mean, it's what I wanted to do. And it was, I mean, it obviously
worked out that way.
It worked out. It just worked out that way. It's just kind of crazy.
So going back a little bit on the acting thing, you said you kind of like wasn't your thing, like not so much.
I fell out of it.
But in 2013, I read that you had a film come out that you were in called Abandoned Mind, correct?
Dude, I'm so glad we're talking about this.
Let's talk about it.
Abandoned Mind. Okay, this one cracks me up. That has been on the internet forever. I'm not in that movie.
What?
Yeah.
It says you on the cast, bro.
I know, dude. It's on IMDb.
It
right?
says you're a happy store clerk.
I would love to get to the bottom of Abandoned Mind and like know how that ever happened. But it is floated around there forever.
It says your like description of your character name and everything.
I know,
bro.
I'm aware. I've read about it. It cracks me up.
It's genius marketing for them.
Yeah, and it's still there, which is crazy to me.
That is genius marketing for them.
I've
honestly
brought it to the attention before, and like I don't know, is like can users like put stuff in there like Wikipedia, right?
That's where I read it.
Somebody keeps doing it, I think.
Because I was going to say, you're like,
you've never seen the movie.
You're like, you said you got overacting. I'm like, but then in 2013, you had just worked on a new project.
That's funny. Yeah, no.
Okay, that makes sense then. Dude, I really want to talk about Fuel Fest.
Yeah, man.
Fuel Fest. That's your big car show.
Yeah.
That's a big thing coming on right now. It's coming to LA.
June 19th. Irwindale Speedway in LA.
This is like not a normal car show, right?
No. It's not just a car show. I mean, there's a drift box, drag, you know, drag racing, a burnout box. It's going to be nuts. And the coolest thing is our date, the 19th, is like 4 days after the state reopens. Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes. So it's perfect timing. It's going to be insane. It's
probably the first event of its kind.
That's what I'm telling people. I'm like, come out and like kick off your summer with us because it's going to be a huge.
So is it like a? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. They just repaved the entire place too. So it's super fresh. It's gonna be dope.
You're gonna have like live music.
Live music. Yep.
Oh, it's like a kind of like a festival.
It's a festival vibe. For That's sure. Awesome. Yeah. I wish it was all weekend long. It's from 10 to 4 on the 19th, which is Saturday.
How big are you expecting it to be? Like Weckfest level, SEMA level? Like,
No. SEMA level would be next level. Yeah.
That would be one day it's going to be like that.
Yeah. No, there's going to be thousands of people there. Exact numbers, I don't know. I feel like with the reopening of the state,
you never know.
It's gonna be a big deal stuff, in itself.
I think it's gonna be huge.
How hard has that been dealing with COVID regulations?
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, as an entrepreneur yourself, you know, like you've got things that you're paying for, you know, you're like making something, right? And like I've got incredible people working for me to help produce these shows. This is going to be the third one we've ever done. And when COVID kind of put a stop to our LA event and our Phoenix event last year, it was a crushing blow because I've got people on payroll. I'm like, listen,
you paid for to plan.
Yeah. And it's like, listen, like you guys, some of you guys are like a family to me and like, but I cannot just
pay you for,
no reason.
Yeah, of course.
You know? And like, it just is terrible. But, we made it to the other side. I've got all my people back. And it's just going to be, a sick
show.
This
is the first one in how long? In person.
The last one would have been August of 2019.
Oh, wow.
That was in the UK.
That's crazy.
It was nuts. It was so rad. This is only the third Fuel Fest show. We did one at Anaheim, Angel Stadium in Anaheim. And that would have been in April of 19. And then we went to the UK in August of that same year.
You got like
we
some
were straight across the pond.
Yeah, that's
like people are like, you are crazy for doing this. But there's a lot of fans out there. Obviously, the automotive scene is unreal in Europe. Right?
So
it's crazy there too.
Where is this one specifically? Like, where do people, do they buy tickets? How do I go?
Fuel, I got you.
Fuel Fest, I need a spot for my car, bro.
Fuel Fest, absolutely. Fuelfest.com is where people can head on over and purchase tickets. There's like different tiers. They can register their cars too if they have you know, something cool that they want to put on display. There's two different levels for that. So basically you can pay for like a better position. But there's going to be a bunch of vendors and sponsors and but like live drag racing, people can sign up for the drag racing, the drift box. It's going to be sick.
Oh my God.
Yes.
This is so definitely a passion project for you.
Oh dude.
I can already tell.
I love it. And the thing that's the little cherry on top. So obviously I'm heavily involved with Reach Out Worldwide. So I'm always trying to find ways to like benefit Reach Out Worldwide too. And so a portion of the proceeds of the show always go to Reach Out Worldwide. It's always going to be our charity of choice. We've raised over $100,000 for it between our three shows. So it's like it's cool as hell too. So it's got a really cool element to it as well.
So it's like, even cooler. It's like the cars support Reach Out Worldwide. It all comes full circle.
And Ro will be there too. Ro will be there too with a pop up selling merchandise and stuff. Reach Out Worldwide merch and. I think there's going to be a lot of familiar faces, people you know, rolling out there too. It's going to be a good show. I'm so pumped.
Good vibes. Good vibes. Pumped. Car show. Come see like wild. Like, is it going to be like professional drifters or like anybody can drift? Like he could drift.
That's a great question. So, there's going to be a bit of it that's going to be curated just because it kind of needs to be
safe.
We can talk if you wanted to slay
the Lambo,
some tires, like
I could slay the Lambo.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it.
Get into it.
That thing's real to drive too. That thing is crazy.
Yeah. No, I've seen it.
Yeah,
I know.
The Hoonigan one. Not Hoonigan. 316 built it.
Yeah.
That thing will slide. That's gonna be so sick.
Yeah, it's really dope, dude.
Going back, has cars always been your passion or is that like a new
I've always loved cars.
And where did that start?
Yeah.
And the taste in cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's
you guys made that like really like a thing, I feel like.
Yeah, Paul did. Fast and the Furious put tuner cars especially
legit
around the scene. So it's like a multi, I guess there's
where
multiple.
Did it start for you?
So when I was a kid, I just like a lot of kids, I loved Hot Wheels and stuff like that, right? I had Hot Wheels. My dad liked cars and motorcycles. My dad rode like Harleys. My dad was like an editor for Street Chopper magazine and stuff like back in the day.
That's crazy.
So we had he had a dark room in our garage back when they were photography like that. And so definitely it's like from dad and from grandpa, my mom's dad, like he built and raced Fords, back in the day. Grew up like a lot of guys, like just Hot Wheels and stuff. Right. And liking cars that way. And so like American muscle cars and stuff like that, like tuner cars. I didn't know anything about them really. And then when I was in middle school when, the first Fast and the Furious movie came out, and before Fast, Paul also was into like classic American muscle cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
We had a few come and go like in our household. My dad was kind of into that. And some of Paul's first cars were either trucks or something old and
something
classic.
With a V8.
Yeah, a V8. And then he got the role for what was then called Red Line, which turned into the Fast and the Furious. That's originally what it was called. And
I didn't even know that.
That's so crazy.
So he's playing this character and he already loved cars, but that totally like initiated him into the tuner, the underground street racing scene.
Ah.
And from then on, as did I, because I'm getting it too. I'm getting all of this
knowledge and information.
All of this knowledge and information. And for him and for myself, like I went full on, like really starting to enjoy the Japanese cars and like later on, like Euro also, because I like performance, straight line speed.
Yep.
I like the tight steering and all that stuff. Like those old
the Porsche driving.
Yeah, you know, those old muscle cars are kind of sloppy.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and they sound awesome and they look awesome. Like I would love a resto mod one day. Like, you know, like a old, it looks old.
Yeah.
But the suspension, everything like, underneath is new.
Mint.
Who does a good job at ring brothers?
I like driving dynamics and all that stuff a lot. So.
So literally through the movie, that's kind of where.
Yeah.
I guess for tuner cars.
Yeah. And like I said, it's funny because Paul was already a car guy, but the Fast and the Furious impacted him.
That's crazy.
And then it impacted the world. A generation, you know, and I put myself on that list of people. Like I meet guys all the time. They're like, your brother was the reason I got into cars. And for me, who's
so many fucking people.
Me, for who's 15 years younger, I'm like, it's cool as hell to hear you say that because I'm right there with you, man.
And then us, like I'm the little brother, younger, like the same way.
Yeah, we were all initiated together at the same time, and so to this day, like I love JDM.
Yeah, and then so the passion kind of grew from there.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Anything that involved cars, and then you're absolutely heavily yourself into racing cars.
You raced the S2K. You raced our buddy Dustin, right?
Yeah, we did. We went out to Button Willow one day. Well, Dustin was really working at Global Time Attack stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I race, yeah, but it's more like I do track days. I'm
Not just
like
for
a
the
competitive
fun.
Race car driver. I go out there and do track days. Got some like awesome people that sponsor me and help with my passion and all that stuff. But it's just like a humble S2000 that's been totally track prepped.
Which is like all you need. Simplicity is like, and I feel like the Honda S2K platform is perfect for that.
It is. It's great.
You raced Dustin Williams? Is that what you were talking about?
We were on track together.
Oh, okay. We just had him on the podcast.
In fact, I told him I was coming out here. He's like, dude, I'm bummed. I'm going to be gone on Thursday. He's like, I'm 5 minutes away from that guy.
Yeah.
No, Dustin's rolling out too at Fuel Fest.
Oh, sick.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Dustin, before he bought his S2000, we were talking. We were at some other event, and he's talking about S2Ks and asking me questions. I'm like, dude, absolutely get one. It's like a couple months later, he picked that one up and then went ham on it. Did the full spoon build.
Which is crazy already. S2000.
That thing is mean. Super cool. And so we went out to Button Willow. And we're just kind of messing around. It was just like a track day.
Yeah.
He was doing testing and stuff to kind of dial the car in more because he had some big milestones coming up to get himself into Global
right.
Time Attack. But But yeah, he actually, I went off track that day and did a little bit of damage.
I mean, if you're not crashing, you're not getting better. I swear I crash all the time. I'm really into drifting.
This uh-huh. wrecked so many
oh,
cars.
Yeah.
Every time I go to track, I break something. And yeah. I'm always like, dang.
Well, I guess that's how you know you're pushing the envelope.
Yes, of course, because I'm always...
It's also like dumb shit, I feel like, with it, where you're like, why'd you do that?
Well, yeah, I guess my last drift event that I went to, I crashed pretty bad. I slammed into the wall at Balcony at Willow Springs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to go fast, because in the video, it looks like I'm going slow. And I'm like, okay, I just need to stop being a baby, just send it through third gear around the corner, mm-hmm. because I want to do like what everyone does on the video. Like mm-hmm. all the smoke comes around, they're super close to the wall.
Yeah, I was just there.
Really?
Just like a month ago. Yeah, Balcony.
And I come in too fast and I'm like, oh, I'm actually fast. I got to brake. And I shouldn't have braked. And when I braked, I just understeered and then slammed. And I was like, oh, that's what I get. That's what I get.
That's how it goes though sometimes.
What made you choose the Honda platform instead of like Nissan? I feel Paul is so known for the Nissan GTR.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just trying to like not trying to be consumed by him.
Maybe that's definitely was a factor. I love that. I don't have like some weird brand loyalty. Like I'm like, oh man, like Honda or nothing, Nissan or nothing. Like, why pigeonhole yourself? There's a lot of rad cars out there. I like them all. So I'm not like a diehard brand loyalist. I wanted to get into like performance driving, really learning how to drive. And so where do you start looking? You start Miata. Miata is always the answer, right?
Yeah, that's how I was going to get
into.
It's
the common phrase. Dude, it's a great car.
Yeah.
You know, it's
balanced
kind
well.
Of, yeah, but you know, a lot of people can't get over the fact that it's a hairdresser's car, nice hairdresser's car or something. You're like, okay, like get in and drive it and then tell me. Like, you know, they're super fun. And obviously the aftermarket's unreal and parts are prevalent because Mazda has cranked those out. So the more I looked, the more I kind of kept running into this S2000 platform again and again and again.
It's just the Miata, but better.
And like, yeah, it's more special, really, right? Yeah. They made a lot fewer of them. It looks better. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit faster, just a little bit more special. And just like for the Miata, I've never really been a convertible guy though. And I think that's why the S2000 like and the Miata were kind of hard sells for me. But then I started realizing, I'm like, dude, they make a hard top for an S2000. Nice. They make several of them.
Especially the spoon top. The spoon top just...
Yeah, yeah. It looks really nice. I ended up getting a really good deal on a OEM hard top on mine. It's not the lightest option.
But OEM is always
like,
the best.
Yeah, and I like the visibility and stuff. Well, once I have helmet on and the Hans device, you can't really turn your head that well anyway. But
yeah.
But I went OEM.
Like an entire build for like what you need for your S2000, because I feel like so many people assume getting into racing is like what is an expensive sport, of course, no matter what area of it you get into. Mm-hmm. But like, how much is a car like that to build for you to where you're just out on the track now having fun? Obviously, if you break something,
I mean, I fortunately had a lot of help,
sponsors
like help with the build. But I mean, we could talk about like a little breakdown.
I'm just curious for me how much like a race car like that is worth. Like, what's Dustin's worth? Like, I don't even know.
Okay, well, Dustin has an all Spoon product, and Spoon is like the best of the best, quote unquote.
Oh. Yep.
And
you're paying top dollar for the name as well as the performance.
Correct. Okay. But realistically, for an S2K to be a monster of the track is good set of coilovers and a good set of tires, and that is literally it. Mm-hmm. And that car
and it's
will
good out the box.
Good out the box. It's fast. Has a great power. Yeah, has a great power band.
Yeah,
shifting's amazing on it. I've never owned one, but like my brother did, and that car was nothing but smiles.
And to your point, what you said, like even the stock brakes are good for a time. You know?
Oh yeah,
just,
of course.
You just swap out the fluids,
uh-huh.
coilovers, and tires. And I ran it like that for a minute, and then. Kind of got a little bit more and more crazy.
Yeah, and then it also is a good leeway into seeing how much you like it. So you're not spending a crazy amount of money on this crazy build that you don't need.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than overbuilding your car and then you can't drive it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Tanner's problem is.
What?
With his like...
Going
like,
full ham?
Like his Nissan GTR. That thing, it runs, it's run great, but...
You should drive it.
All
it
the time.
Yeah, Guaxilla. It's still green, right?
No, it's white now.
Oh, it's white
now. Yeah, it's all painted white.
You know, I saw that at the Purist Toy Drive a couple of years ago.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to drive it, bro. It's Alpha 9. It's got some good power.
Okay.
And the it's twin fast. Turbo Huracan, bro. You can drive that too. If you want.
Okay.
If you want to whip them. We'll bring them out to the show too. Fuel Fest, guys. Make sure you get tickets. That'll be my first car show all pandemic long. All right. Let's go back a little bit and talk on being a paramedic. You didn't actually become a firefighter? That was your original goal with it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You did or you didn't become a firefighter?
No, I did not. No,
how come you didn't make it there?
No, so I was
you took over the
yeah, so the show. So yeah, so I was so it gets confusing for a lot of people. So like there's EMT, right? We hear EMT, emergency medical technician, and then there's paramedic.
Right.
So I was an EMT before I moved up to Oregon. And then I was doing some like volunteer I was working full time for an ambulance company. We handled all the 911s in the county that I was living in. And my partner was always a paramedic. So you have to have to be an ALS car, advanced life support car. You have to have at least one paramedic right. on it. So I was doing a little bit of volunteer firefighting with the local fire department. Cause it's kind of how you,
it's hard to become up, a firefighter
you know, to get that job. You've got to do, you know, volunteer firefighting and I'm working full time in EMS. And then I was going to school full time to get my, to become a paramedic, which state by state, kind of can be done a little bit differently. In Oregon, it takes 2 years. I already had a 4-year degree under my belt, but in Oregon, they turned into an associate's degree. And so I had to like work with the school and be like, yo, I have a 4-year degree. Like, do I have to take like all of these like other like ridiculous yeah. courses? Like, I just want to do the paramedic course. Cause in California, you can get it done in like 8 or 9 months, like a hyper accelerated
program.
Yeah, I know people.
I know people.
I had to like do 2 years of like anatomy and physiology. And like a bunch of other stuff, which is useful. It's good to know.
Yeah, important.
But so I was working full time, going to school full time, and occasionally doing some volunteer firefighting with one of two departments in the town we were living in. And I had just completed paramedic school. I was a paramedic for about 6 months when Paul passed away, and then my life brought me back to LA, right. and it just. Changed everything. Changed right. my trajectory for everything. So,
yeah. Kind of scruffled everything up.
Yeah.
When you got, basically, when Paul passed away, and then when people started looking towards you as like the new, or did you ever feel like you were looked at as the new Paul Walker?
No, I
especially
I
with
think,
the film. I maybe suppose.
Yeah,
film,
you know,
you're just thrown into this.
I certainly don't see it that way. Obviously, I'm his brother, and some people even get it confused. I'm like, I'm not his son. Mm-hmm. Either I'm his
people think
I'm
that?
His brother. Oh, there are people like worldwide. I think some people it's like no, I'm brother.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not his son. You know, like, and so I'm very appreciative of it because it's I mean it comes from it's like I'm flattered in some respects that some people look at me like look up to me like that like they did to my brother, but it also feels weird. Cause like I'm not
a different
Paul.
Person.
I'm Cody. Like I'm Cody Walker. Like I looked up to Paul.
Yeah.
So like I got you. I get it.
We can relate on
up,
that.
Yeah. You know, like we're good on that. Like I looked up to him big time. He was my big bro. 15 years older than me. Took me under his wing. Traveled the world with him. Had a huge impact on my life and who I am today and my interests that I have. Like. Full stop, you know? I think some people, sometimes they look at me and they go, man, you look just like him. You know, I think as I've gotten older, I think maybe I look more like him because
with the beard,
again, 15 years, right? As
yeah,
I've aged, as more time has gone by and I've started to bridge that age gap, getting closer and closer because he was 40 when he passed away. I get it more and more. I get it wearing a mask out in public. People go, I know you. You're Cody. And I go, how do you know? And they go, dude, it's all here.
Yeah.
It's all here in the face and the eyes. I'm like, that is the
bluest eyes
that is the craziest thing in the world. And, but you know, I people, you know, they want to reminisce and talk and it's like, you know, I hear them out and everything. And in the end, it's like, I appreciate it. You know, like, it's cool. Like I love them too. I miss them too, you know? But yeah, I'm me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm me.
Were you surprised at how strong his fan base was or how like insane it was? Or did you already know that?
No, I didn't know that. Nobody knew that. Paul didn't realize that. Paul had no idea. which is really crazy.
Yeah.
It's really, really crazy.
For real, though.
Yeah. Cause like just all his like work he's done, I feel like has always been just something people have always gravitated towards. And just like his, and even his actions, even doing the Row outreach program, he got known for that, doing Hades Project, which is even insane. Mm-hmm. How do people, can people volunteer to do Row?
They can.
They
yeah.
can?
And yeah. ROWW.org. So reach out worldwide. So,
and is that only, can, so say if you live in the United States, can yeah. you do it for a different country? Is it like wherever you're?
No, you, yeah, no, you can sign. I mean, we have volunteers from all over the world. We've had one of our, we call him the, I'm going to little shout out to Craig DeMalin. He's, he's been a volunteer with Reach Out Worldwide, for number of years now. Great guy. He's Australian. Aussie dude. Love Aussies. He's just free. We call him the disaster gypsy, dude. That guy is on a plane flying wherever it is that Ro is going. That guy has been on so many missions, both here in the United States and abroad. Like I first met him when Ro went to Nepal back in like 2014. I think it was 2014 or 2015. And he's like emailing. He's like, at the time anyway, he's like, I'm a flight attendant out of Australia. I'm based in the Middle East. I fly for Etihad Airways. And he's like, I just love what Reach Out Worldwide does. And like, because I'm a flight attendant, I can fly for real cheap and my schedule is really open. And like, I saw that you guys are going to Nepal and I want to go. So I'm going to get on the ground. What do you need?
He's just like, anything.
Do you need? And we're like, all right, if this guy is, we don't know if this guy's for real or not, but like, it doesn't hurt to be like, we could use some interpreters. We could use some transportation when the team gets there. And we get there within like 36 hours of the big earthquake. We've flown on the other side of the world. It took us 26 hours to get there.
Right after?
Yes. Our response time was crazy fast. And we show up at Kathmandu Airport in Nepal. And this Aussie guy comes walking up. Hey. I'm like, yo, are you great? And he's like, yeah. And I've got translators and I got two vans outside. And I'm like, this is unreal. We call it the Ro factor. Like just, I don't know. There's always some all-star or something that just like believes in the cause and like comes up in such a big way. And we're like, dude, what is this? We're like, I guess we're calling it the Ro factor. Like,
I love that.
Crazy.
So people can head over to your website and like, what does the sign up look like? Are they signing up for a certain thing, or it's literally just they put their application in and you let them know what you need help with?
Yeah. So if they go to ROWW.org, there's like a tab up top, like get involved. You can fill out a form. It's like information about yourself and like what skills that you have.
Right.
Internationally, when Ro goes international, they're typically medical teams and they're small teams. Mm-hmm. So typically the only people that are going on those missions are medically trained people, right, whether they're an EMT, a paramedic, a nurse, a doctor, sort of a thing. Outside of that though, when we respond here domestically, or if we're doing like debris removal after a tornado or a flood or whatever, where it's not really necessarily that people were injured, but it's more like property damage with people without insurance. Like, dude, if you've got, you know, if you've got the ability to walk around and pick up objects and you don't mind getting dirty, like we'll take anybody. Great. We'll take anybody. So they go on to ro.org, they can fill out the form, and then they go into our database, and then they get plugged into our newsletter and stuff, and they find out, hey, Ro is going here. Like if you are available these dates, please respond back.
Yeah.
And then we kind of curate the team from there.
I got a question about Ro. So who is like finding these specific things you go help with?
Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's a,
like you were in Haiti, you said 36 hours right after, right?
Nepal.
Or Nepal.
Yeah. It was
right after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like who, do you have like a person for that? Or are you like, this is a big problem, we should go fix this? Right
yeah. Now? It's not any one person. It's a combination of our volunteers that like have volunteered with us that are maybe in different parts of the world. Yeah. And also obviously, you know, us at the office and people that spend a lot of time working with Ro. We're always monitoring kind of what's going on in the world because things are, sadly, things are always happening. Yeah, every right. single day, something is happening somewhere. But we're a small organization, so we have to look at, okay, this happened. It's really sad. Like, do we have the resources to, like, help that,
yeah,
though?
Do anything about it?
Or are we just going to, like, spend a bunch of resources just to say that we went
we
there? Yeah, yeah, and I'm not about that at all.
Because that defeats the purpose
for you. That totally defeats the purpose. So it's always a balancing act. It's like, okay, what happened? Okay, where did it happen? Is it safe for our volunteers? That's so important.
Of course.
We can't, like, knowingly put our volunteers in harm's way. Obviously, there's always going to be danger. That's just kind of, that's
life.
That's life. That's going out into the field and doing that. And, like, that's something that our volunteers accept. Like, okay, yeah, there's always risks involved. But, like, are we putting them into a zone where, like, some warlord's going to come by and, like, gun the whole town down or something? Like, no, we're not going to do that. Like, we have to be mindful of the safety of our volunteers and mindful of, like, do we have the resources to help what the need is? And so those are, like, different factors. So we're always balancing. It's like, we're going to go where we can make the biggest impact with our resources.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
How is, balancing row life and the Fuel Fest life with, your family?
Like, yeah, I was literally just going to ask a similar question.
It's so gnarly. It's so hard. So yeah, we have a 3.5-year-old and a 6-month-old. And
congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it's dope. It's perfect. I got my girl and my boy, and I'm just like, and my wife's like, I want 3. I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. Yeah, it's, you know, my wife and I are both everything that we've done and everything that we've achieved thus far has been us just, like, figuring it out.
Yeah.
Like, my wife is incredible. She's so much smarter than I am. I married a civil engineer. Like, you know, like, she's super smart. She doesn't do engineering anymore. She's just like, she, everything that I do, like, she's involved in 100%. Without her, like I'm not very organized. She keeps things on the ball.
Are you
keeps
the idea
moving.
Guy?
Yeah, idea guy. That's
makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. You know, you have to have your idea guy, and you know,
yeah, someone who executes.
Someone who executes really good with, like, spreadsheets and all that stuff.
Calling people,
yeah,
all that good stuff.
Yeah. So with that, like, we both work, so it is tough. We're in between homes right now because we sold our house in LA back in December. I've been kind of quiet about it, like, on social. I haven't said anything like, oh, adios, we took off, you know, like, we sold the house, living with family up in Oregon at the moment. So we got ourselves, like, some sitters and stuff to help us because, yeah, it's tough with 2 kids. And right now, like, it's even more tough because we're in between again and, like, trying to figure this out. Fuel Fest coming up June 19th.
And
it's
trying,
like,
to buy a new
crunch
home?
Time. Oh, dude, it's so unreal.
There's a lot going on.
Had to take my daughter out of preschool, you know, during all of this. And so it's, like, full-time mom and dad and also running row and running Fuel Fest and running. My wife helps a lot with her family's beef business. They raise Wagyu cattle up in Oregon.
Shit.
Oh,
what's
dude,
it
that's
so,
crazy.
It's called Pacific Rogue Wagyu.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Is that that?
It is.
Is that good
bomb.
Shit?
They have the 5th and the 11th Japanese Wagyu of the, it's like the Tajima line. I'm going to screw that up for sure.
Yeah.
Ever born outside of Japan because her dad and her grandpa got them out back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. There was like a tiny window of time where Japan was allowing it and they closed the door on that. They're like, no, this is a national treasure. You know, no. Yeah. So they've been raising these things now for a long time and they sell like a F1 breed,
oh, wow.
which is half Angus, half Wagyu. And then they sell full blood Wagyu. And their brand is Pacific Rogue Wagyu.
So you get, like, unlimited source?
Dude, we eat good.
Oh,
we eat good living up there, man. It's to the point too where we're like, we even typically are eating, like, the less desirable cuts.
Yeah.
Cause like,
it's so good.
It's always sold out. So, like, we always eat the scraps essentially, but it's so good. It's a
multi-hundred-dollar
totally
scraps.
It tastes totally different.
Oh my!
And you don't have to be like a connoisseur of meat to, like, know that there's a difference. Like, it's a noticeable difference. It's like someone just melted butter,
right?
Yeah, just
on your steak,
right,
and you can, like, cut the filet with a fork.
Oh.
It's like unreal.
And how does they make Wagyu again? It's they feed it beer, right? They feed the cows beer. Know.
So yeah, I think there's some.
There's got to be some
in Japan. I think that there's maybe some that have done that, where they're feeding it sake and they're massaging them and all that stuff.
Is that kind of how it really is or not?
I don't know. I think maybe like.
Just eat it.
Maybe like the most high end of high ends in like some remote region of Japan. They probably do that.
Yeah.
What we don't massage our cows. They're pasture raised, and then they before harvest, like they go on like a special diet for like a year to like year to 500 days, and that's where you get the insane like marbling. We talked about some crazy stuff today. It just went full beef. Spectrum. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Full
spectrum. PacificRogueWagyu.com. Check it out.
Check them out for real. I'm going to have to check them out. Shit, that's like my favorite thing ever.
So besides cars and row, do you have any other hobbies? Secret hobbies people might not know about?
We know you fish.
Oh, yeah. You fish and you dive, right?
Yeah, I love to fish. Free dive. I'm not certified for scuba, and also like scuba is cool. I've done scuba. You are.
Yeah. I got certified in Guam, thing, bro. But I'm into like the randomest thing. Stuff. And then like, I just pursue it like full core.
I love that. I was in Thailand and I wanted to get certified. And so like I started it and then I had to go. So I didn't finish it. So I'm not like certified scuba. I still need like one more open water dive or something like that. Honestly, it's been so long. I should probably just take the whole course again so I don't kill myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, the free diving out here is just easy.
Where do you go?
I don't need to go. We'll just go like my brother
area?
Caleb, usually down in South County.
Oh, nice.
Like down there. You've got to be careful where you go because there are sanctuaries down there and stuff like that. You can't, it's not just like free range, like go have at it.
Yeah, kill everything.
But we'll go out there and, in the places that you can, and we'll go spear fishing.
Fuck yeah.
There's a lot of calico, like, you know, but it kind of like, yeah. But then the good ones that really taste good are the big, the sheep's head.
Yes.
They're super freaky looking too. You can find big toads out there underneath some of the rock structure.
Those
and
are
stuff
the fish
like
that turn from male to female, aren't they?
I think
there's some fish like that. I'm pretty sure.
I know that there is. I don't know if the sheep's head or not.
I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah. Random fish fun fact.
Freaky looking.
Do you ever go lobster fishing at all?
I just did it for the first time.
Were you dive in the water or a hoop net?
No. We were diving and we were catching them with our hands. You got to do it with gloves because there's spiny lobster out here. For those watching, our lobster here don't have pinchers, but they're super spiny.
Yeah.
And it's freaky because like
I was trying so hard to get this guy to do it with me this year.
Oh, you gotta go.
You didn't say once. What are you talking about? Actually, go.
Well, okay, we're gonna have a friend on a boat.
Well, let me know.
We go hoop netting, but let's go free diving.
Yeah, dude, it's fun.
Down in Sunset Cliffs is the best spot for it.
Is it?
Yeah, for lobster.
Oh well, then there we go. Let's do that. That'd be fun. It's freaky. It's kind of freaky though.
Was it like?
Delete it. Yeah, bleep that.
Was it scary going down there and just like, okay, I'm gonna commit to this guy?
Yeah, we weren't in super deep water. We were kind of just outside of Dana Point Harbor. Like we weren't far. There's like some rock structure out there. It was more for fun. We weren't seeing a lot of toads out there. We're just like catching them, let them go. Yeah. We're like, yeah. Here's adios. Get out of here. But yeah, it's weird when you're peeking in the rocks and you see them in there and you're like, I'm going to commit to shoving my hand in this hole.
You don't even know what's in there.
I hope there's nothing else in there, you know? And like, yeah, it's super fun. I'd love to do it again and get some real toads and bring them home and cook them up.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
$60 a pound or some crazy
shit?
Yeah,
it gets crazy,
for
right?
Lobster right now?
Is really? It? Yeah. $60 a pound?
It's expensive, bro.
Money ain't worth as much as it once was either.
Yeah, that's true. So. That's also very true.
Are you into crypto at all?
It's fascinating to me. I feel like as Gen Zers, you guys probably are pretty deep, huh?
Well, now it is tanking thanks to Tesla.
Yeah.
If you wanted to know.
You know what I saw?
It doesn't tank. It's all it does.
That's why I don't really understand it. So I haven't played the game at all. Like I have a bunch of friends doing like, do I pronounce it correctly? Dogecoin.
Yep. That was perfect.
So they were doing the Dogecoin thing. I have family members that have played the game too. I don't really completely understand it, but I did see that article yesterday. Tesla will no longer be accepting Bitcoin as payment for Teslas. And I thought I was like, oh, that's going down tomorrow. Yeah. And we turn on the TV and of course Bitcoin's like
5 minutes after they announced just that, 5 minutes. It went down like $7,000.
Well, then he goes, we're not going to accept it due to privacy concerns or what?
Because it's
bad for the environment.
Mining Bitcoin is apparently bad for the environment. Because the computer has to run. Something like that.
It has to run this insane algorithm.
Really that big of an impact?
I guess so. They were saying it's bigger than any other fuel of any kind.
Is Bitcoin... See, this just shows how much I know about cryptocurrency.
It's also confusing.
I thought it was all mined for, so it's not.
No, it's like, I don't know how... So when you buy... Okay, Source, trust us, bro.
You were going off last night telling me about this.
Just a friend of a friend. But basically, you get a supercomputer, and a bunch of them, and you have to, find this algorithm, and it's like kind of a Rubik's cube. And so the more computers you have running, supercomputers you have running trying to solve this problem, the better chance you get of getting the problem right.
Yeah.
And so
that's some crazy shit.
Yeah,
that part I get. But what I don't understand is it's not like we're mining for gold or you know what I mean? It's like someone just scattered some Bitcoin into the ether, into the code. So how many Bitcoins does homie have?
I think there's
at home?
3 million to mine.
No,
see,
27
that's
million.
The other thing is, do we know?
I don't fucking know.
How much? And someone made the number up.
I don't know. I don't think anyone knows.
It's so weird. It blows my mind.
It does.
I can't get it. But I get why people, right now especially, it's so hot because
this is the opportunity.
The economy is scary. People don't have confidence in the dollar where it's going. And so it's the perfect storm for crypto.
Oh, yeah. Of course. It really is.
It really is right now, especially.
It's, yeah.
And I'm always telling him to try to figure out a way to use crypto to his brand. I feel like that'd be the smartest thing to start doing. Actually start enforcing it or start making people use it.
And then, also the NFT kind of thing, that kind of goes back to the crypto stuff. Are you
that I don't
them?
Get it all.
I've heard of NFT. That also
I don't
is
get
a,
it.
It's just,
that's a motherfucker itself.
It's crazy to me.
Literally, bro.
That is.
People be like, what? Non-fungible token. They're like, I don't know what it is. I'm like, never mind. I'm not even going to.
Yeah.
Never mind. I don't want to explain it. But I heard the future of NFTs, people could see that going, is like, say you have a famous music celebrity and they're doing a concert, they would say in the future, this is maybe a use for NFTs, they would sell tickets to their show as NFTs, and then me as someone who goes to their show, I can sell it from their 2021 summer concert. I can sell the NFT to somebody else because it's a piece of art, right? You've seen what an NFT is. And then the artist would get, say, a percentage of me selling that ticket to somebody else. It's just crazy fucking shit. It doesn't even matter. I don't know, man. It's so confusing.
It's so weird. So we're running with NFTs, but I don't know if you guys ever saw this, the meme, though. There's a meme that came out years ago. It has circulated the internet millions and millions of times, and it's a house on fire, and there's this little girl.
In front of it.
Right. Okay, did you hear about that?
No.
They sold that as an NFT.
No shit?
Yeah. She is now a college student. That little girl who looks like she set that fire, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude, it was me. It was
I remember
people using it over and over and over again. So she took control of that, and she sold it and made $500,000.
And it's just a picture.
Now she doesn't have to worry about student loans.
That's fucking amazing.
Now she's you know what I mean? I was good for her. That's pretty sweet. I like that story.
Bought it?
Yeah, someone bought it for $500,000.
But I guess they own the rights to the picture now. So they can.
They own that bitch.
They can do whatever they want with it.
But, think about it. That was, they never put that picture out thinking that was ever going to make any money off of it. So $500,000 of something's better than nothing. That's crazy.
For real.
Yeah.
Future of the world, man. Where do you see it going? The future, I don't know. I guess that's a pretty big fucking question. I got a better question. I like asking people.
Yeah.
What is your meaning of life? That's my favorite question to ask people. What is life to you? Everyone has a different meaning of life. But what is it to you? I'm sure you've thought about this to yourself.
Oh man.
Right.
I think that it changes though. I don't know. I guess when you become a parent too, maybe the meaning of life changes. I've thought about, and then
you almost feel the thought of it's kind of pointless to even have. The point of life.
I guess
is to live.
I'm having a downer day, I might think like that.
Yeah,
what is it? The point of life. That's a question.
Because everyone's got a different answer for themselves.
You know, the point of life, I guess, it's...
It's a really big question, but it also could be answered very simply.
Yeah.
It's, again, it's to, for you.
Yeah.
It's you, Cody's, you know, Cody's meaning of life.
I don't know. I guess the fact of the matter is that we are here. And so for me, it's just like, you know, do the best that we can, because, you know, there's those that are coming after us. So if people say, well, what's the point of all that? Like, well, that is what it is. There's like, there's the next generation. So maybe it's just like, you know, try to leave it better than like when you entered the world, and do the best that you can. Like, you know, I have kids now too. So it's like everything that I'm doing is not like, it just kind of changes your thought on everything. So like for me, it's like now I'm living for my kids, and I hope things are better for them than they were when I was around. Just like, you know, things are obviously better for us than from when our grandparents was around. Like, right?
Big
like,
time.
I don't know. It's pretty crazy. And I'm sure they were thinking the same thing. It's like, I just want it to be better for my kids and my kids' kids.
I like that. Sorry, I know it's a weird question, but
no, it's
good for people to hear, you know? Like, what's Cody's meaning in life? What is, and then they, a lot of people look up to you for that kind of shit. So,
what's one of the best things about being a father that you've experienced?
Oh, dude, it's like,
you're pretty new in the
yeah,
game.
It's yeah.
Only 3 years in?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess every day, like, something new happens. They say or they do something, and you just die. Like, it's so funny. Like, it's like things, you're just like, you weren't doing that yesterday.
Like, you realize they're growing a little conscience.
Yeah. Or like, they'll do something, and you'll be like, whoa. Like,
who taught you that?
Who taught you that? Where did you pick that up from? You know, it's like, oh, it's their personality. It's like, you are my kid, you know, what the heck? It gets so crazy. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just fun. It just makes you laugh every day. It's hard work. It's hard ass work.
Oh, I bet.
It is the hardest job I've ever had.
You said, you're living for someone else.
So. Yeah. It is so hard, because it is never all rainbows and sunshines. Like sometimes they just, my daughter wants to have a meltdown because she's 3 going on 13. She would call her the three-nager. And like, it is a struggle sometimes, but it's so rad, because you're kids, dude. When they're little too, like my daughter, like they look up to you so much. They want to be just like you.
Of course.
They want to do what you do. And so it's super special. It's fun. And I'm trying, my little girl, I'm trying as hard as I can to get her like into cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like she's down to like help me wash the car and like help, you know, and I drag her out to some of these car events that I go to, and she wants to sit in the car, and she likes the sensation of speed. You know, like I've never gone crazy fast with my kids in the car, but like when you're getting on the on ramp, you got to put your foot down, and she loves that feeling. So I'm like, okay, this is a good thing.
What's her favorite car of you that she owns? Of yours that she owns?
She actually, I think her favorite car is not what I guess someone would assume, like, and I think it's just because it's higher off the ground than my other cars. I have an older, it's like an 08 Lexus GX 470, which is like a Land Cruiser Prado in like foreign markets. It's like a Toyota Land Cruiser Prado. Anyway, it's like, it got a 3-inch lift on it, and it's got big tires on it, and the windows in the rear go all the way down. None of this like BS, like
child safety.
Drives her crazy. Dad, roll it all the way down. I'm like, it is all the way down. No, she can see the world, and the visibility is so good, and it sounds cool because it's got a V8. That's her favorite car, and it's definitely not the fastest car that I have. And then after that, the only other car of mine that she can ride in, because it's 4 doors, is my Type R, and that makes all the freaking fun.
Yeah, the noises,
import
the
tuner sounds, and so she loves that.
Yeah. You know? That's what you drove here, right?
Yeah.
Right, good. Hey, man, before we start wrapping this up, I got to know for me, I just got to know what it was like finishing a Fast and Furious movie. Like, what was some like behind the scenes? What was it like being on set? Like, I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Because that's like the biggest movie franchise ever.
It's huge, right? I mean,
Or for length, like how many different ones they made, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
So I imagine the movie set was just crazy.
It has to be. Yeah, I mean, you're talking like, you know, no expense spared, you know, budget. Really.
Oh, big
like, there's no.
Why would they?
There's no risk. They know that it's going to crush at the box office. So yeah, I mean, it was weird. Honestly, it was, it was sad, and then it was fun. And then it was, there was lots of laughs, and there was a lot of crying, and there was a lot of ups and downs. It was overall, it was a positive experience because it brought me and my brother Caleb together because we both helped to finish the seventh movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you know, at a time where we're both hurting so bad, like to get to spend all that time together, we worked on that movie for like 3.5 months.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
A lot of the scenes, like 75% of the movie, Paul's scenes had been completed, but there was still 25 to 30% that hadn't been, and they did some really trick stuff, using footage that had been unseen from previous films and like superimposing. Maybe he was leaning on a railing and then they'd go in post and he's leaning on a car.
Oh, wow.
And then me and Caleb's, we went and got fully scanned. Like the state of the art machines were puppeteering Paul's face, and we had to go and say hundreds of words to map our voices.
Wow.
And then after all that was said and done, then in post we had to go in and resync the audio with his voice. And so we're like trying to change our voices to be a little bit more like his to like capture
help
it.
Them.
Like it was super crazy. You know, it was, you know, and there was days though too, where it's like, it was fun. And then later on that day, you're like, I feel so bummed and so,
yeah, like, why am I
so
here?
Sad. Cause like, I'm the only reason I'm here is because Paul's dead, you know? And like, I'm wearing his tattoo on my wrist every day, which I, you know, that was weird. When we first started, they put these really high quality tattoos, but it's like, it's a copy of his real tattoo.
Like fake tattoos.
Yeah. Of his real tattoo that he had on his wrist. And so we're wearing that, and it's just like, man, this is really, really weird.
Where did it take place filming?
All over the place.
Really?
So when we started, we were in Abu Dhabi.
Oh,
so
shit.
In the UAE.
Right.
And then we were in Atlanta. A lot of stuff in the States is filmed in Atlanta. Georgia has a lot of tax incentives and stuff like that. They filmed a lot of Fast and Furious movies in Atlanta over the years. Atlanta has built huge studios and stuff to get
people to come
to get the industry over there. They film tons of stuff in Georgia. So we were there, and then we were also in LA because there are scenes where they brought it back to the home front, you know,
in
front of the Toretto house and all that stuff is here. That's where it all started. So it really is a global franchise. They try to film it in different places, like every movie. They filmed a lot in the UK over the years. You've got like the British villains, you know, and all that stuff. Jason Statham and stuff. So
is this the end of your acting career? You think you're ever, you focus on car shows and family right now. I know you're busy as hell.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And driving.
Yeah, so I've done some stuff since I was going out and I was auditioning and doing the grind and stuff like that. There, you know, and I've done some projects since then. I've been fortunate. There was
a movie you posted on your Instagram. Film.
There was a really bad movie that I did out of the gate. That was on Netflix. It still might be on Netflix, but it was with a hero of mine, dude, Nick Cage.
No shit.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage. Dude.
Holy shit.
No way.
Terrible movie.
Whose part? Like,
but just the production value, everything. I had so much fun making it though, because there was like a bunch of young guys, myself included. And like, we were in Mobile, Alabama for like 6 weeks and just like had a blast making that movie together. But it was just like the production value and the script and like all that stuff. But it was Nick Cage, dude.
Nick Cage,
like,
what the fuck?
Nick Cage came up and like introduced himself to us and like, dude, we know who
we know
you are.
Who you
like,
are.
You're the man. Like, dude, like, how do you do it? Like, you're two places at once, so the story goes. You know, like, because that guy's like in every movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's like a conspiracy. Like, is there multiple Nick Cages? But yeah, there's that. And then I did a movie, a small role in it, but it was dope. It was called The Last Full Measure. Mm-hmm. There's Samuel L. Jackson.
Holy shit.
Ed Harris, William Hurt, Christopher Plummer, like legends in this movie. I just had a small role in it, but it was awesome. That's a good one. Last Full Measure is a good movie.
Amazing. So kind of whenever it comes.
Yeah.
When
I did this other one. It was supposed to be a TV series. I went, got the role, and I'm like a Jason Bourne type character, and I'm just like beating the ever living shit out of everybody. And it was so fun because, you know, that's fun too. I love like the physical roles.
Yeah.
Cause that's
you have to choreograph that shit.
Yeah. Choreography and like, you know, gun handling, looking all legit and stuff. And that was really fun. They ended up like selling it as like a movie, but another like not so great movie. But it was fun. Like I don't see myself that way. I just like kind of found like fell into that whole world again, obviously, because I helped finish Seven. And you know, I auditioned for these, and I've certainly been turned down way more times than I've gotten the job. Like this, it's a hard job, but there's no jobs. Job security sucks.
Yeah.
I've got kids now. Yeah. I was like, that's not what I ever aspired to be. Like, right. Oh, I'm going to be an actor. And like, it's all that or bust. And like, we're just going to scrounge by because your dad is an actor. Like, nah, there's so many other things I'd like to do more. And I'm
so right now, then your whole world consists of Fuel Fest, Row, family.
Yeah.
No other projects you're working on?
It always seems like there's a couple other things like in the pipeline. They don't always work out,
right.
You know. So like there's nothing really I can to talk about. But yeah, like I stay busy. Like I'm always up to doing something. So we'll see. We'll see what the next thing is.
Is there something you don't ever get to talk about or maybe tell your fans that like this would be your opportunity? We talked about a lot of great things already, but maybe there's like that one thing where you're like, finally, my opportunity.
You know, I'm pretty open book. Like Maybe there's not. Yeah, no, I'm just stoked. Like I got to talk about Row today. That's super important to me. Obviously Reach Out Worldwide and Fuel Fest, and I got to talk about my kids a little bit. And like I was telling you, like my little boy got sick, you know, a little bit ago. I posted a picture of him after he was doing better. Cause I didn't want to like, post some like
sad
picture. It's like, hey, just telling you now for the first time, but we're okay. But yeah, my son, he was diagnosed with infant botulism, which is crazy.
What is
this crazy, horrible shit? So yeah, now I'm kind of like a little bit of an expert on it. So it's caused by a spore, right? That comes from contaminated soil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that thing is, like that contaminates the soil, but it's a spore, right? It comes from contaminated soil. They always tell you don't give a child under two honey, because honey is a known thing that has those spores in it just naturally. So you don't give a kid's honey until they're 2 years old, because you can
give
botulism. Botulism. So this spore is introduced either by food or contaminated. Maybe it's on the surface of something, and then you stick your hands in your mouth.
Which babies do.
Yeah, which is what happened with him, because we didn't give our kid honey, and we weren't introducing him to weird, unsafe things.
Just being a baby.
Yeah, and so it starts in the gut, and you don't have the bacteria yet in your gut to kill that spore. We all do, but an infant doesn't. And these toxins start to build in your body, and it literally just blocks signals from your brain to that muscle group and starts leading to paralysis. And it starts in the head and literally just starts to move southward. Starts in the head, goes to the neck, then starts going to the arms and extremities.
But without your body like telling itself that's happening?
You just lose your
receptors?
You just lose your ability to hold your own head up.
Because your body's not going in there and fixing
it. It's just paralysis. Yeah. Like, it's not that you feel weak. You're just like, it ain't
and
there.
It stops working.
Like, what's going on?
And you as a parent, what do you think is like going on? Like, you're seeing your kid not.
It was crazy. So, like, our little guy is like, you know, he's.
And you said you were away from home.
We were away from home. We were in Arizona when it happened. And we just, one day, we noticed, like, little buddy is not supporting his head. And like, he's almost 6 months old. Like he can support his head. That. Like he can, you know, like, and like I'm holding him up and he's just like a noodle in my hands. He's real low muscle tone. Like, okay, we're going to the hospital because this is not normal. So we go to the hospital and they diagnose it as botulism. But ultimately what happens is if it's not treated, it goes to full body paralysis and you lose your ability to breathe. So it has to be treated by an antitoxin. They flew it out from California. It was a one-time deal, kind of like an antivenom. You know what I mean? I got bit by a rattlesnake. I need the antivenom. So they flew it in from California because that's where the laboratory is that makes it for the whole country.
Great.
It's crazy.
That it was close.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We're not very far away. So they flew it in, gave it to them.
You feel like it's a common thing. It would be in more places.
You know, yeah, but it's not that it's not very common.
Oh,
not very common in the U.S. It's something that, you know, they hear about, but like our doctors and stuff is like, I've only ever had a few cases of this. But you guys caught it early.
Holy shit.
You brought them in. Sometimes parents come in, it's too late. We got to put their baby on a ventilator, and then they have, you know, they're delayed neurologically speaking. Like they need a lot of physical therapy and all that stuff. So my son's got the NG tube right now because his ability to swallow was kind of screwed up. So the muscles in his throat. So he's got a tube that goes into his nose and it goes all the way down his esophagus into his stomach. And it's connected to, so when it's normal meal time, we're pouring milk into a bag that's connected to a pump. You just screw it into the little end of him that's hanging out. And you just control the dose and the rate. You hit start. We're just plugging my kid in. It's super weird.
How long is he like that?
We hope not or much longer. It all comes down to what they do. Have to do a swallow test. It's like a dye that he swallows. And then they do an x-ray or whatever.
And that's from his neck because he wasn't supporting his neck. So the muscles
got
messed
up? Yeah, so these muscles. And then so, yeah, it literally starts from the head down. So it affects your throat too. So it's weird because he needs speech therapy. Even though he doesn't talk yet. Because a speech therapist deals with the muscles in the throat, including swallowing. So we're going to be getting a swallow test hopefully scheduled here real soon because he's just beating the shit out of this thing. Like, he's doing so good.
Really?
Like, other than the tube hanging out, you would never know there's anything wrong with my kid. Like, he's totally so happy. He's not yanking on it, which is like, we're like, wow, we're so lucky.
Yeah.
He's like tolerating this thing hanging out of him. So, but yeah, he's going to be totally fine. As soon as that tube comes out, like, we're golden. Some of it was going down into his trachea and into his lungs when he was drinking from a bottle, which is why they did that. They're like, that'll lead to pneumonia and some other horrible stuff.
And then once it's fixed, it's out.
Yeah. So that's the thing is the toxin. So they give him the antitoxin, it eliminates those toxins. But it's not like, oh, now you're 100% better. Like some damage has happened, some atrophy of those muscles has happened in that short amount of time that happened. But so you just need some PT to like strengthen everything again. So it stops the progression of botulism, but it's not like an on off switch.
Right. Like, that makes sense.
Still. Right. So now, but now, like I said, like if it wasn't for that tube, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
He's
a fighter.
Strong little boy. Yeah.
Dude, great
he's
to hear.
He kick ass.
And he's only 6 months?
Yeah, 6 months.
Already going through
the
this
first,
crazy
on
shit?
On May 1st, yeah. Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
He's going to be like one of those like chill stories when he's like 18. Like, oh, yeah, when I was like I was like 6 months old.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. A story that he doesn't remember, but he's been told about a million times. Yeah. We're like, dude, that's the best part. He's not going to remember this because this sucked. We were at the hospital for like 5 nights. We're like, this sucked. But mom and dad will remember this.
Hell yeah. You can show them the podcast.
You can just, and you can see the podcast and you can watch the video.
That's awesome.
Or the photos, you know, like you won't remember it.
Man,
so that's the good news.
One more thing I love to do. There might be somebody watching right now. Her name might be Sarah. She might be having a really, really bad day. She can't get herself off the couch. Maybe she's not motivated. What is some, you know, words of Cody motivation?
Oh, wow.
For Sarah.
Dude, these are big things. You're just trying, you know,
because there's
Sarah,
people like that. They're listening right now and they're trying to relate to us to make themselves feel better. And it's just like, this is how it is. Do
you know what, Sarah? You know, it's just, life is kind of like a roller coaster, right? It guy goes ups and downs, but tomorrow will come. Just get outside if you can. Just go for a walk. Try to clear your head. Like, things will get better. Like, there's times in life where, I guess there's times in life where, like, you just feel like you got run over by a truck and then someone went over and just, like, then, like,
ran you over with another truck.
But, like, time heals everything. And, you know, just surround yourself with people that love you and you'll get through it. Like, it is possible even when it's like,
too shall
when,
pass.
Even when it's really, really dark outside, like it will pass.
The sun will come up.
It will pass.
Love that, man.
Yeah.
It's been a great episode. Can you believe it's already been an hour and 15 minutes?
No.
Is that crazy?
That's nuts.
It's been an hour and 15.
Oh, right on.
That's amazing. Thank you guys so much for listening. Where can we follow you on platforms?
My Instagram is like where I'm most active. It's Cody B. Walker.
Cody B. Walker.
Middle initials, B for Bo. So Cody B. Walker on Instagram. And make sure you guys check out Facebook, Fuel Fest. Cody Walker on Facebook. All my accounts are verified, so you know it's me. So if I'm asking you for $250, don't send it to me. FuelFest.com. People can head out there right now, buy their tickets for the show, which is on June 19th at Irwindale Speedway. If you've got a ride you want to register, you can register on there as well.
Me and Maverick are going to be there.
And it's going to be a sick show, guys. The state opens up on June 15th, so our date is killer.
June 19th.
Come on out, 19th. Start your summer with us. June 19th is the show, but the state opens up 4 days prior to that. Right. So I'm stoked about that. And then if people want to check out Reach Out Worldwide, ROWW.org. Also on Facebook. Rose really busy on Facebook and Instagram, letting everyone know like what we're doing, where we're going, stuff like that, and how they can get involved. So
amazing. Awesome. Check out Fuel Fest. Check out all those socials. And thank you guys so much for watching. Make sure you head over to Spotify. There's always a full extended version of every episode over there. So make sure you guys are always listening on Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff. Thank you for listening to No Fox Given. It's been Tanner.
It's been Maverick.
It's been Cody.
And we're out. Peace.
Peace.